Welcome to the Grace Story Podcast, where we introduce you to interesting people and their inspiring stories. From Grace professors, current students, and distinguished alumni, to special guests and speakers on our campus, you can meet new people and hear how they are impacting the world around them. This podcast is recorded and produced at Grace College and Seminary, located on the shores of Winona Lake in the great state of Indiana. This is the Grace Story Podcast. Today's guest is Keith Minier, lead pastor at Grace Fellowship Church in Pickerington, Ohio. Keith has been there for about 20 years, and in that time, seen the church grow from 70 to over 6,000. Keith graduated with a degree in chemistry, now obviously serving as a pastor. He's married to Kelly, and they have four children, Caden, Kaya, and twins, Camille and Cooper. And when he is not with his family or at the church, he loves playing basketball, watching sports, water skiing, and fishing. Keith, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I've never thought of you as like a fisherman. Like, you know, the others made sense, but then when I got to fishing, I'm like, fishing. So what is it about fishing?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think you said it, but it's become fishing and golf, which are like official signs of a middle-aged person.
That's true.
So I like being outside. I like the chase of fishing, and golf has become the competitive hobby that is something that I really chase and try to get better at.
You're a guy who's like always on the move. Can you slow down enough for fishing, or are you out there like in a motorboat, you know?
No.
Legit.
When I'm fishing, it's pretty chill. I'm trying to get after it. And to be honest, it's actually been something that my oldest son loves to do. And so we spend a lot of time. My parents have a house on a lake in Michigan. And so my son and I have spent a lot of time out on the water together. Now my youngest son loves to fish. And so it's been a great way to actually connect with them. But I love it. It's fun.
Let's get into sort of the chemistry to pastor thing.
Yeah.
So you went to college. What were you hoping? What was sort of the career path you saw yourself on?
Yeah. So originally I was going to teach chemistry and coach basketball. So I was in college to do education, become a teacher.
And you played college basketball.
I played college basketball, love sports, been a part of sports my whole life. And then I had an experience when I was coaching my high school team in the summer. So my high school coach had asked me to come home, coach the team. I was coaching him in a summer league. And I had an experience at one of the games where a kid I had played with, he was a sophomore when I was a senior, and he should have been better than I was, but he wasn't becoming better than I was, and he just wasn't hitting his potential. So after the summer game I coached, I was talking to my head coach from high school, and I said, what do you do? His kid's name was Brian. I said, what do you do with Brian? He's just not hitting his potential. It's driving me crazy. And he said, if you can't handle players not meeting their potential, you can't coach. He just was like framing, like, this is the reality of what happens when you coach. And I said to him in that moment, I'm like, I guess I can't coach. And so I decided, I'm like, I can't do it. I'll end up harming someone. Like, just the way I was wired and what I knew was going to happen. So I decided not to coach, but I stayed with chemistry and said, I'm just going to pursue it. So I dropped the education. I'm like two classes away from a teaching certification. I did a bunch of stuff in the classroom. But then I just went with chemistry and majored in chemistry, graduated with a degree in chemistry. It was something I really enjoyed in high school, something the way my brain kind of likes the kind of A plus C, A plus B equals C with the way, you know, equations and whatnot work. So then I graduated with that degree from college, and then I went and started working in the marketplace as a chemist.
How long were you in industry as a chemist before you were like, I could be a pastor?
Yeah, about 5 years. Graduated right out of school within 2 weeks, started at a really big company in Columbus, Ohio. The Limited has, you know, all their different brands. And the brand that I got hired for was at their Bath and Body Works White Barn Candle Company. Huh. And I started working in research and development with them.
So you're like all those candle mixes. Like,
yeah,
we can thank
I actually worked in a department called the ABC department, which was anything but candles.
So
we did home air fresheners and all that kind of stuff. But I was in the lab with the lotion people and the candle people. And so I did that. And then out of that, I worked for this big company. And then it's kind of a part of the story, but my boss's boss at Bath & Body Works, she left to go do this company in California, didn't close financing, came back, and she wanted to start a startup company where we would basically be like an outsourced R&D. And she knew me from Bath & Body Works and like believed in me. She thought like I was a young person with a lot of potential. So she wanted to hire me to come be a part of this startup company, which was like an extended R&D. So I left this big company, went to this small company where I was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of employees and lots of rules and cafeteria and HR department to like four of us. And I started working in that space and I was doing research and chemistry stuff, but she kind of noticed that like I was like a B minus chemist, like I wasn't great at it and I didn't love it, that she started bringing me into the marketing, sales, making the deals thing. I had some really cool opportunities during that time and I got connected to that. In the middle of that, the whole time of this, I was a deeply committed volunteer in a local church. I was serving in a young adult ministry. I was actually leading a young adult ministry, teaching and preaching at that once a month. They had small groups. We'd build it a team. And the church was grooming me, they thought at some point, probably to plant a church. They didn't know that, but I was doing some things that were on that track. And I had always felt from the time I had become a Christian, like ministry might be in the cards. I had done some things even in my youth that kind of led to that. I mean, the church that I grew up at let me preach my first sermon when I was 17. I was still in high school. It was kind of bizarre. But in all of this, my wife had been an international studies major with an emphasis on missions. And so she had said before we got married, I want you to promise that we'll spend some time overseas. So in the middle of this second job, we went and lived in Cambodia for 6 months.
I did not know that.
And so I served over there in Cambodia with what is now Encompass World Partners back in the day, Grace Brother International Missions. And we were talking about going to be overseas. So sort of fast forward the story, really cool, by the way. I led my boss at that small company to Jesus. She supports me to go on the trip and she lets me keep my job even while I'm gone for 6 months to come back and have it. So I go on the trip, come back, and then as things would have it, this small church in this city called Pickerington lost their pastor. They talked to me. I went over there, preached a few times. They said, would I be interested? So there was this crazy week in my life where I interviewed with the church on a Sunday. I interviewed with Kimberly Clark in Wisconsin in Appleton on a Monday night and a Tuesday. On Thursday night, we got approved by Encompass to go be global missionaries. And on Friday, I got offered the church job and Kimberly Clark job. Wow. So all three of these things happen at the same time. And I'm basically like with my wife, like, what do we want to be when we grow up? And yeah, that was like really
huge. So let's talk about that. Cause I think about our college students and like, you know, that's going to happen to them, right? Most of them will have seven different careers.
Sure.
Not just jobs, but career fields. And I think we're on three already for you. So, you know, you get to this Friday and you have these three options and obviously you're praying about it. Where's the Lord going to lead? Yes. And that's good and right. What else factored into the, like, how do we make this decision?
Sure.
What do we think the Lord wants for us?
Yeah. So we were praying and we were doing a lot of self-reflection of like, what are your gifts? What are your passions? What do you really love? There's family dynamic. My wife's family was in Central Ohio. My parents at the time were in Northeastern Ohio. And so if we leave Ohio, what is that going to mean? And obviously that would have been true for Cambodia, but it would have been true for Wisconsin. There was finances, very different financial realities to all three of those.
I'm sure the small church had the best package to offer.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, the church at the time literally couldn't pay its mortgage. You know, 50 people, 70 in the whole thing. My first weekend there ends up being 52 people. So it's a small church. I mean, but what it really came down to, aside from family, prayer, gift sets, was some really pivotal conversations with people I trust and people looking at me. And there's this, it's almost kind of become like folklore conversation with my mentor at a gym one day playing basketball. And we were at this gym playing basketball and we were playing pickup. It was like it's a public place where you can go play hoops. And we were waiting to play the next game. And there was this guy on the floor, a guy I knew very well, a guy named Terrence, who was about 6'7", 6'8", and he could do it all, like a 19-year-old. And he was gifted. He was smooth. He could get to the rim. He could shoot. And I had told Terrence many times, dude, if you want to go play in college, I'll talk to some coaches I know and help you. And the truth is the kid wanted to give his life to drugs and other things. He wasn't driven. So Terrence is playing, and he comes down the floor, And he like crosses somebody over, goes in, hammers one, dunks it. Then like two possessions later, he hits like a step back three. And I looked at my friend who was my mentor that I was playing with. We were sitting there and I said, Terrence, man, like just watch him. Like he has so much potential. It just bums me out that he won't leverage all his potential for being able to play. And my mentor, who's a pretty understated guy, he just kind of looks over at me. He makes eye contact and he says, everything that you just said about Terrence and his potential to be able to really be awesome at that is how I feel about your potential with ministry in the local church. And then he just turned away and he like didn't say anything else. And I remember I was like, dude, I want to fight you. Like, why did you just do that? And I couldn't get away from it. I mean, I couldn't get away from that. I think I knew in my heart he was right about some stuff. And so like that moment led to a bunch of other really important conversations. But so seeking people I trusted, family, you know, finances. And then to be honest, the opportunity at the church, small church, not going great, but there, you could tell there was a lot of potential there. Mm. I could see in the people that they were ready to be led and they were hungry to serve. And so kind of all of those things led me to that moment.
How did you, you know, sometimes as I interact with students here at Grace who are thinking about ministry, right, the ministry you have now is what they're attracted to,
yep,
not the ministry you had then,
yep,
when there's 52 people, yep, and they can't pay the mortgage.
Yep.
And yet you saw some potential. What was the potential you saw? And then what happened those first, you know, let's say 5 years? What did you do,
yeah,
to turn it into the ministry you now have? Does,
yeah,
that make sense?
A couple of things I would say to that. One is you should never do it because you think it's going to become something.
Yeah.
And with that, that's sort of like marrying someone hoping you're going to change them. Not a real good idea. And so you should go into it like knowing what it is and saying, if it's this forever, as long as I feel called here, I'll stay here.
That's
until,
right,
I'm called away. But I saw willing people. I saw people who were hungry amidst adversity. I saw a community that was growing. I saw a facility that could be leveraged. And then I had also, this is hard because people don't know me when I'm saying this, but I'd also seen my own track record of things I had connected to. The Lord had blessed. And so I felt some level of, whether you want to call it calling or anointing or gifting or whatever you want, like I felt like the Lord had used me. And if I stepped into something, it would have a chance. But I saw people who were saying, we will work, lead us. Like we need to be led. In those early days, I mean, there are some real strategic things I could go through. The way we raised the culture of volunteer, the way we engaged the community, the way we started to navigate weekend services. But I think in all of it, it's really this principle. And I've told this to literally hundreds of leaders over the years. What I really would say is we just did the next right thing right. We just kept doing the next right thing right. So if the next right thing was someone visited, you handled that visit well, you followed up with them, you returned phone calls, you met with them, you did the breakfast well, and you did that well. If it was service, you did service well. If it was figuring out how to navigate launching something, you figured out how to launch it well.
Yeah.
And if you do enough right things right over and over and over, small, slow, daily, before you know it, there's progress.
That's right.
You know, everybody wants to like show up and hit a grand slam. Just show up and get up on base and figure out how to navigate that stuff day by day. And so like we still don't really have attendance goals or financial, like we just were like, what's the next right thing we need to do to honor the Lord? And let's do that. So what does this conversation mean? What does this weekend need? What does this meeting need? And I think we just did that well as a leadership team and as a church. And then we got traction and momentum. And then when the Lord's doing something, people want to join in with,
yeah,
that
yeah,
you know? And there was a time where it felt like it was almost weird where we could have kind of thrown rocks at people and people still would have come in, you know, like there was just a momentum that was created from that.
I love and watching you and seeing your church and knowing some people involved. Sometimes there's a tendency or a draw to I'm a Christian, and therefore we actually compromise on excellence because we're nice, we're loving,
yep,
we're caring, and those should be good. But instead, what should really happen is we're excellence because we're Christian. We say that here on campus, like we want the best engineers who happen to also be Christians. We want the best nurses who happen to also be Christians. And they are the best because they're Christians. Yep. That's why they strive for excellence. I certainly see that in your ministry. I want to fast forward. So 20 years, and I think there's a lot to be said there of just faithfulness in the same place. And I can only imagine the number of ups and downs experienced and the perseverance that also helps to build and be a part of that momentum of what God's doing. But you've now extended your ministry and been involved in a few other things. You speak at Momentum, which is really important to us here at Grace as well. You've been involved now on our board of trustees. Just last week, you participated in the Center for Thriving Leaders through our seminary, spoke to local pastors, ministry leaders about reaching the next generation. And you often think about that, like how do we engage and build into the next generation. Those are going to be the future of the church. What did you share last week in sort of just a little bit about how do we engage the next generation?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much there, but a few things that we talked about is, one is we've got to define reality accurately and look at what is our culture, what have we moved to. But sometimes we're good at that, but then we pout about it. And so let's stop longing for a culture that is no longer and recognize the culture that we're in and then do what we need to do in light of that. So it's defining reality and then embracing this moment. God said that for us right now, this is our time on earth and our plot of land to do what we're supposed to do so that people will find out God is not far away. And so part of, I think, the first thing is like embracing this is our battle, right? Then I think you start to get into what are some real strategic things that have to happen once you've understand what that is. And there's a laundry list of those. I think one of it is ministries need to do a much better job of empowering homes to do better home discipleship. So much of what we're experiencing in our culture and reaching the next generation begins with getting it right at home. And sometimes people hear that and they think that means, you know, longer devotion hours and Bible study at home. And while that may be true for some, that's not true for everybody for what it means. But it does mean rethinking how we go after our homes and how we get after that. I think it means we have to really go back to teaching some basics to the next generation, particularly in Christian subculture. We assume way too much that people do not know. We are assuming orthodoxy for church kids that we shouldn't be assuming. And we need to go back and really go back and understand, do people understand the basics of the Christian faith and really get after how that plays out.
Yeah.
I think it also means appropriately leveraging the next generation to serve while also keeping the governor on them to help them understand where their character is and what that means. And I think sometimes there's an extreme. It's like, let them all in all the way, and then things blow up. And then some of us are like, keep them away. Don't let them near anything. And I think there's got to be a real thoughtful approach to what that means. So there's a bunch of other things I said, but those are a few that I think are front and center.
And something we were just talking about earlier that you're also thinking about is not just the next generation, but also how do people then take their faith into the workplace? Like, as you said, how do you be where you are? How do you lean into the culture that is? And so you're launching a podcast. I don't know if we're breaking news here or what, but you're launching a podcast. Tell us a little bit about like your intentions behind that and what you're hoping to equip the body of Christ with.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that kind of marks my heart and passion just as a person is I love seeing people reach the destinations they want to reach. I mean, I love people going forward. You know, I've heard it said that talent is shown in your presence, but leadership is shown in your absence. And I love the idea of being able to shape people, however that looks, or something I'm connected to shaping people. I hope my kids go way farther than I ever go in anything, you know? And I want that to be true for our other leaders on the team. And so the podcast heart is like, everybody wants to go somewhere. We just want to help you take the next step in the direction you want to go. Some people need information. Some people need inspiration. We just want to come alongside and do that. And so my heart is to do that in a way that is very practical, kind of Coach Keith oriented, and give people the next step or frame things in life that we all think about. And sometimes that's conceptual, 30,000 feet. But sometimes it's like, how do I take ground in a hard conversation? Yeah. We all have to have hard conversations. Who can give us some mechanics to do that? So some of it is in leading staff, leading teams, leading other pastors. What are some lessons I've learned that I can try to maybe pass on and be helpful with? But do it in a way that people in our church or other Christians could pass on to non-Christians and then go, there's half good content here. Who is this person? And maybe that'll lead them to go, we've built an audience for someone who might be a bridge to come to church or around Christians. The world we're in, back to reaching the next generation, is we've got to learn how to build bridges of trust. And there's different ways that we do that. And this is hopefully one of the ways that we do that while also helping people along the way and just be better at their life to where they want to go.
It's almost full circle back to where you began yourself as a chemist in a business, leading your boss to Christ. This is the kind of thing that could help equip person in that
for
context to talk to their boss about how that plays out.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Yeah. If people are interested in just learning more about you, more about the ministries that you're involved in, what's the best way for them to sort of find you?
Yeah, I mean, they can go to the church's website, gracefellowship.cc, and they can find things through sermons or, you know, my bio as they naturally navigate that. You can follow me at like a Twitter X at, you know, at Keith Manier. One of the things I've struggled with so much in ministry, particularly in pastoring a big church, is, and even launching a podcast, is you have to somewhat be willing to do self-promotion, and I loathe it.
I'm with you 100%.
You know, I hope I loathe it because it's part of my character that I don't want to be in a self-promoting world and be that way. But I just hate even thinking about talking about come check me out at this stuff. And so I say that because you asked, not because I want to do that, to be honest.
I loathe it, and I'm actually bad at it. Like, I always forget to take pictures, and it just isn't natural for me.
Yeah, in a culture where if you're trying to, you know, be an influencer and promote, you've got to be willing to kind of play that game. I don't mean it in some, like, false humility, fake self-righteousness way. It's just not something I want to do. But I also know it isn't necessary part of leveraging the influence God's given.
Well, you are a phenomenal communicator, so let me be the one to say I highly suggest checking out Keith, the church, and his content that he's putting out. Thanks so much for the way you've invested in our campus, speaking in chapel today, Center for Thriving Leaders, Board of Trustees. You've been highly engaged and given so much of your time and talent to us, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a real gift to be able to do that, and Grace College and Seminary have become one of the few doors I'm choosing to say yes to and walk through right now with things outside of my church and family and whatnot, and glad to get to do it.
Thank you. And thank you all for listening to the Grace Story podcast today. Thanks to Avery and Rick for their work producing the podcast. If you could do us a favor and like, comment, subscribe, share it with others so they can be inspired as well, we would appreciate it. And if you have questions or comments you'd like to share, feel free to send those to podcast@grace.edu. And until next time, live your best Grace story today.